Cause like a winter tonight, I thought I would always have light. The quick flash that you gave to me, so dark I could barely see. Looking
from wherever you are around the world, welcome and thank you for joining us. Today we're going to be exploring beyond therapy. What happens if traditional therapy or medications hasn't worked for you? Where do you go? Well, I'll tell you where you're going to go. You're going to go to Roy Nelson Healing. And today, Trisha Nelson is going to introduce to us Roy Nelson Healing. She's director of Roy Nelson Healing and the spouse of Mr. Nelson. So let's welcome Trisha Nelson to the circle. Welcome to the circle.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Today, we also have a special co-host. Dr. G is with me today to explore Roy Nelson Healing in depth. So let's start off right off the get-go. How did you get started in this?
Good question. My experience with Roy Nelson Healing started many, many years ago, over 25 years ago, and it started with my personal journey and really my own struggles with food addiction, binge eating disorder. Also, I had a problem with alcohol and other addictions as well. So I struggled and I looked for many years, really since I was a kid, I struggled especially with food and weight. So I was overweight and I was a chubby kid and it was very painful for me and I was very obsessed with my weight and I would, I had a roll in my tummy that I'd squinch up in my hands and I'd think about how I could cut it off. I mean, it was terrible, but you know, I was very obsessed with trying to control my weight or do something about my weight, lose weight. Even as a teen, I joined like gyms and diet programs and took amphetamine, over-the-counter amphetamines and did a lot of different things, but nothing really worked for me and it was very distressing for me. So, you know, I really, for my entire high school years, I struggled and I gained a lot of weight. By the time I was 21, I was 50 pounds overweight. And it was very, you know, embarrassing to me, shameful for me. But what was the worst about it is that I tried many things and nothing worked. So I went to, I did go to therapy for several years. I went to eating disorders therapy. I went to 12-step programs, food programs. I read tons of self-help books. I had a whole shelf full of self-help books and just did a lot of different things, conferences and treatment programs, and nothing worked for me. I would always, you know, once in a while I'd get control of my eating, and but it was probably a week or two later that I'd lose control again. And
actually,
so,
I wanted to ask you about that. Did you go up and down a lot? Would you try something
totally,
and it worked and then all of a sudden it faded again?
Yeah, I was a yo-yo dieter is generally what people like me are called. So I would. I'd gain like 20 pounds and I'd diet and lose 10 pounds and I'd gain another 20 and lose 5. I mean, I remember one time I struggled for a whole summer. I couldn't believe it, but I struggled for the whole summer. I'd weigh myself obsessively and I was like 145 pounds. I remember I struggled between 150 and 145 an entire summer and I was trying really hard. I mean, that's how bad it was, is that I you know, put all my effort into it, but there was always leakage somewhere. Like I was always eating or nibbling or, you know, binging or whatever in between my jogs and my, you know, furtive efforts to starve or, you know, be really, really good. So I basically did yo-yo a lot. And so it was many times little successes with a whole bunch of failures, basically. Yeah.
Did it affect any relationships with people?
Definitely. I mean, the problem is when you struggle with your weight, you know, in my experience and a whole bunch of people that we've worked with, is that, you know, there's so many emotions that go along with it. I mean, it's not just being overweight and embarrassed about how you look. I mean, basically, I mean, my overweight stemmed from my low self-esteem. So I definitely struggled with how I felt about myself to begin with. And then you add, you know, 50 pounds to that and you feel really bad. But it affected, you know, whether I wanted to go out with friends. A lot of times after a binge, I felt so horrible the next day. And, you know, I had zits on my face and I was bloated and my pants didn't fit me. So I canceled all my plans and everything, you know, I wanted to do it really worked around what weight I was and how comfortable I was being seen in public. I mean, a lot of self-obsession, self-condemnation, and that, of course that affects your relationships. Uh-huh. I mean, I had good friends, but, you know, sometimes I felt like, why would my girlfriends, I was usually the fattest one of everybody, and I used to think, you know, why would they even want to be friends with me? I mean, that's how bad I felt about myself, is I just felt like, who would want to be friends with me because of the way I looked? And, you know, when I look back in pictures, I didn't look that bad. You know, like, I carried it pretty well, and I didn't look nearly as bad as I thought I looked, you know. But, you know, when a person hates themselves, it's just, it's all ugly. Yeah, it's absolutely. So that's sort of how it all started. And basically, I tried many different things and nothing worked. So by the time I was 21, I was really in a lot of despair. And I had been in a 12-step program, had lost a bunch of weight, more than I'd ever lost before. And I was basically, I could feel my obsession with food creeping in again. And because when you lose weight and you're in the process of losing weight, you kind of feel like, I got this, you know, like, it's good, we're good, you know, I'm doing good, I'm looking good, people are complimenting me, I'm done. You throw away your fat clothes and you're like, you know, I'm home. And just within seconds after, you know, getting your goal weight, which I never, at that time, I didn't get to my goal weight, but you still, you have that sense of, you know, accomplishment, but it is dashed so quickly. And I felt that coming on. I knew I was about to put the weight back on because that's what I had always done. And I just felt, you know, I was so discouraged because I could feel like it was sort of like a tidal wave on its way into shore. I mean, I knew I was going to lose it. I was going to, like, lose control, put the weight back on, and, you know, I'd be going through this whole cycle again. And I thought to myself, you know, I can't do this for the rest of my life for another 80 years. You know, I want to live a long time, but I can't do this. Plus, it's not healthy. You know, it's
not
good
for your body.
Did you
feel like you didn't deserve it? Did you ever feel like that when you actually lost the weight? Did you feel like, I don't know if I deserve looking this good?
Definitely. I mean, not consciously, I'll tell you. People, in my experience, you know, when you've been fat, all you want to do is be skinny. Like, it's like, it's all you want to do is be skinny. And of course, you always think, when I'm skinny, I'll be happy. Like, that was my number one myth or, you know, delusion, is that when I'm skinny, everything's going to be better. I'm going to get a boyfriend, I'm going to be loved, I'm going to be, you know, admired. But the problem is, the food was serving me, and it was serving me in many ways. You know, and so basically, I think underneath, of course, I didn't feel worthy of living in a thin body. And I think people don't realize that it's a lot more complicated than just taking weight off,
sure,
you know. So, but I basically, that was at the point when I was at that age and I was about to really put the weight all back on. That's really when I despaired. And I met Roy Nelson. That's when I was introduced to him from some other people who were working with him, and I saw dramatic, absolutely profound changes in their own lives, and overcoming bulimia and other eating disorders. And I said, give me his number, I'm calling him now, and that's what I did. And he started to work with me, and that's really when things started to change for me. And it really had nothing to do with diet or food or weight at all. Yeah. And that was, you know, his whole message is that, you know, my problem isn't food or weight. My problem goes much deeper. So he started helping me deal with those underlying causes. So I know it's a totally long answer to your question,
but
that's how it came to be that when he helped me and I saw what he could do, like, I was with him and sort of mentored with him and saw him helping other people. And I just kept seeing these amazing transformations in these people's lives. That's when I wanted to help him. I just wanted to sort of hook my little wagon up to his and really just, you know, help him and help others get to him. You know, that was really I feel like that was my personal mission, is to help people who are suffering, who don't realize there's a way out, you know, really help them get the help they're finally seeking.
That says a lot about you. And I want to get Dr. G in here, but I have two more questions. I can't let her off the hook yet.
Okay.
Sure. So if you can you tell me one thing that you noticed when you started working with Mr. Nelson that made you feel different, that you knew, oh boy, this is right, this is what I needed to begin with, it started changing?
Absolutely. You know, he started telling me things. I mean, first of all, telling me food was not my problem. I mean, that didn't mean I could go out and eat burgers and fries, you know, but the fact is that my problem goes much deeper than that. And I'd been so focused on what I ate, how much I ate, how many calories, how much I'm going to burn. It's all about food. It's this total obsession about food and weight, and most of the food – you know, programs are a lot, there's a lot of focus on your body and your weight loss. And he said to me, if you address the underlying causes, your weight will take care of itself, because what you're eating is a result of what's eating you, essentially. So if you focus on that, you know that, obviously, but when you focus on that, you know, your weight will take care of itself. And that was absolutely my experience. So that, perfect. You know, that was probably the biggest thing that I learned from. And it was such a relief to get off of the symptom and start dealing with a real problem.
That's a great way to present it, too. We got one more question. I can see Dr. G is biting at the bit to get in here, and I want to get him in here. Are there people that may not be the right fit for the Nelson method?
Yes, absolutely. You know, Roy Nelson Healing has, you know, what Roy has done is he's developed a method based on his own experience that he guides people through. Mm-hmm. And this is a process that helps a person identify and heal the underlying causes, because without dealing with the underlying causes, you'll never heal, basically. You'll never get over the symptom. It'll come back, and it does. I mean, people have been struggling with their weight and other addictions for decades. So basically, what we know to be true is if somebody feels like, I just need to lose, and I'm talking a lot about weight. I had alcohol issues with alcohol, with sex. I mean, I had a lot of addictions that he helped me with as well, because when you deal with the root cause, all the outer symptoms heal. But people who really feel like, no, I just need to lose 5 or 10 pounds, or my problem's not that bad, or it's just one little isolated thing, you know, we might be able to help them see that's not actually true, that it's a lot more systemic than they realize. Okay. Mm-hmm. But typically, somebody who's tried many things, like they've been to treatment, they've been to 12-step programs, they've tried therapy, if somebody's tried many different things and it hasn't worked for them, those are the people who are right for the Nelson method. If it's somebody's first rodeo, chances are they're not going to believe that it's a deeper issue. And so those are the ones who typically won't be a fit for us. But if somebody's been, you know, they've been at it, you know, and they've been making several attempts at recovery in it, and it's eluded them, those are the ones that are really the right fit for us.
Dr. G.
Yes.
Nobody knows the mind as good or as well as Dr. G.
Oh, there are a lot more people who do. But I know a little bit. But, I really want to actually get to the core difference between the Nelson method, the 28 Day to Freedom, and let's say other types of treatment modalities that are out there. As you know, I'm a clinical psychologist myself. So what I do is psychotherapy.
Okay.
And in different modalities as well, I use integrative approach, you know, bring in multiple ways of understanding the human behavior, certainly from different theoretical perspective. And I really liked the fact that you mentioned systemic approach, and it's got to be a systemic approach. In fact, we have a whole lot of, you know, series about addiction treatment and, you know, discussions that attend to this issue, the problem with today's treatment models being so focused on non-systemic ways, and that's why they're kind of missing the boat.
Right.
Now, but before going there, before you explain the difference between the Nelson method and other treatment modalities that are out there, such as 12-step recovery, you know, the inpatient, residential centers, IOPs, etc. Mm-hmm. What I would like to kind of backpedal a little bit is what you mentioned when you kind of got it, when you met Roy, and the difference he made in explaining really to you that your focus was not on the right core issue.
Right.
That is something that escapes a lot of us in terms of and when I said, yeah, I know that, and you said, you nodded, you know, right?
Uh-huh.
A lot of us know these things, right? And just general public also, if you talk to them about some of the behaviors they engage in, they already know whether they're doing the right thing or wrong thing, or maybe looking at the right thing or wrong thing. But it takes a special moment, a specific type of a message that, needs to kind of hit the home run. And my question first is this: what was that specifically to you? Did Roy kind of talk like the language? Was it the language that he used, the vocabulary that he used, to kind of already tell you what you already knew, that you're focusing too much on the symptom rather than, you know? What was it to you?
Okay, it's a great question. Basically, it was a few things. I will say that, you know, I was in I was in eating disorders therapy for twice a week for a year before I started working with Roy.
Yeah.
Which is pretty intensive. You know, I had a job, but I was working twice a week at this therapy. And I, within that entire, and I was going to 12-step programs and other things, but in that time, I talked about my problems. I mean, I had incest that I experienced as a child from a relative. I mean, I had a lot of things that certainly contributed to my pain. I talked about things, and I knew these things hurt me, but I talked about them in an intellectual way, at the level of the intellect, but nothing actually released from my heart, okay? Mm-hmm. So I could talk about them, but the pain was still very much locked in my heart, and it wasn't, so I didn't cry much. Like, I was very knowledgeable. I could rattle off lots of, you know, things about my problem. But the pain stayed lodged in my heart. And so when I started, when I met Roy, I felt immediately a sense of safety that I'd never felt before.
Okay.
Probably in part because he has been where I've been.
Okay.
So he's suffered horribly from many different addictions and has overcome them. And so, including being morbidly obese, so I felt inherently that he got me.
Okay.
And so there's that connection that I never felt with a therapist. I mean, I just always felt like there was a disconnect. You know, every addict has that little part in their brain that says, with somebody who's trying to help them, how would you know you've never been there?
Right.
You know, like, there's a cynical sort of separation that we create with professionals. We're like, you don't really know how bad I feel. He knew, you know, he knew, and so I trusted him, and so I felt safe with him, and also he just, you know, the way he works is he's available 24/7 to people. He's very accessible for his clients, and so I felt like, you know, not on a conscious level, but subconsciously, I felt like there was so much trapped inside that nobody could really handle me. Like, I felt like if anybody knew what was going on inside, they would lock me up. You know, they would lock me up and throw away the key because I was so crazy. And yet I did everything I could to present such a together facade. And with him, I felt so safe as if, you know, and I had an inherent feeling that there's nothing too much for him to handle. Like, no matter how much rage, no matter how much insanity or, you know, really crazy thinking, it was going to be okay. And that sense of safety and well-being helped me open up in a way that I never could in a therapist office, basically.
Wonderful. Thank you for explaining that.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, Carlos, that's exactly the feeling I've gotten since meeting Roy and Tricia, that I would like to kind of describe as very unpretentious, unbridled, and unreserved way of just sitting with yourself. And that's wonderful because, you know, a lot of people are not comfortable with admitting that there are two sides to every human being.
Right.
You know, we have our weaknesses and we have our strengths.
Yeah.
There's no shame in admitting that we have weaknesses. And that's what I believe is really part of recovery, not just from addiction, but any other problems that we see in life, is to own those weaknesses.
Yeah.
And the way you're describing your journey, I really love that because you're not pretentious about it. Like, the facade is gone, you're more authentic, you're very genuine, and that shows, you know, that you have been able to integrate, you know, both these weaknesses and strengths, and you're comfortable with yourself as a human being. And that's the feeling I've gotten from the very beginning with both you and Roy, and happy to even discuss this more with Roy himself.
Great.
But thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And that brings me finally to, you know, that something, a message that I want viewers of Therapy Cable to take with them. In fact, by the way, that's why we created Therapy Cable, because we wanted to kind of lift the veil on healers and professionals and, you know, basically people who have kind of the warriors of the field, people who have been there, done that, tried different methods, and finally been able to overcome their, you know, concerns and problems in life. Because most of it is behind closed doors. The public, general public, doesn't know about it. And part of the stigma is that, because there are not that many people like yourself or myself who are willing to admit we have had weaknesses too. We have been working on those and willingly admit that what they are, like when you're talking about eating disorder, right, and body image and let's say depression. If somebody is depressed, there's no shame in saying, yes, I have had depression. Mm-hmm. And that's what works against stigma. Mm-hmm. Admitting that we all are human beings and there are ways of overcoming problems that we experience in life.
Absolutely.
So now, specifically what I would like our viewers to get away from this episode is to understand the Nelson method better. Mm-hmm. Because part of it, I understand you say, is Roy's presence, participation, message, work, everything. But maybe in kind of an umbrella term, so you could explain some specific differences between the 28-day freedom method and, let's say, 12-step recovery.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just say that we certainly don't take issue with anything out there because, you know, everybody's on a journey. Mm-hmm. And I've tried lots of things, and each thing has helped me in some way, you know, even if it's just to know that's not the right way for me.
Yeah.
And 12-step programs have done amazing things for so many people,
sure.
Especially Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the grandfather of all the programs.
Yeah.
And so I would say bring it back to my own experience again, and that's that while I got a lot of help in the 12-step programs, I didn't stop my addictions, especially my food addiction. And I think it's probably because I just needed to go deeper. And mm-hmm. and so even though the group that was the identification with people is a wonderful thing, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you can't be just coming out of the closet and realizing you're not the only one who's ever done the things that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of really finding a solution and true healing, I just needed somebody who could really hold my hand and take mm-hmm. me deeper, help me feel safe enough to really go to places I was afraid to go. And that's, you know, facing all the pain and the shame of my past. Mm-hmm. And so what Roy does, which I think has helped, I mean, a lot of people from 12-step programs will come see Roy because, like, for instance, we had somebody who struggled with, you know, was many, many years sober and still had other addictions that he couldn't overcome, so he came to see Roy. And we've got several mm-hmm. people who have done that. They've overcome one addiction in 12-step programs, but it hasn't taken care of all, you know, they've switched.
Sure.
They've switched.
Yeah,
and I'd say that's one of the drawbacks of a 12-step program is that it does focus on the symptom in terms of I'm going to go to AA for drinking, you know, OA for food, mm-hmm. you know, sex addicts for sex addiction. Mm-hmm. So you're focused on one addiction, but every addict mm-hmm. will jump trains, you know, or jump tracks to another addiction.
Yeah.
If they don't do the deeper healing, they'll have to have relief.
Yeah.
Okay, so even though they're in a support group to stop one thing, mm-hmm. that pain is going to keep seeking relief. And so it's going to jump to other things. And so what's nice about our program, it's sort of one-stop shopping where when you do deal with that pain and that fear and that guilt, you don't need relief. Like you're comfortable with yourself and
mm-hmm.
you're not looking for a fix constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody has time to go to five different 12-step programs.
Right.
I mean, if they do,
right.
it's a profession for them, you know. So this is really a nice opportunity.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
That's right.
And drop in the studio to do a little filming.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you for the explanation.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining the circle, Tricia. You want to stay tuned for our next show, which we're actually going to meet Roy Nelson himself. We're going to find out what he does. So stay tuned for that.
Hi, welcome to Adelante. This is Adelante Recovery, and my name is Yvette Kuglin, and I'm part of the staff.
Adelante Recovery Center has helped people in dual diagnosis for 5 years. We accept most PPO insurances and provide luxury accommodations and 24-hour support. To speak with an admissions counselor, call 1-888-242-4450.
A lot of time, we don't even know what's wrong with us, and sometimes we need to get away to figure that out. So if you want to go for a little retreat out in Corona Del Mar, which is a confidential location, we're here to help. So we're only a phone call away. Thank you.
Welcome back, and now we're with Roy Nelson himself. He is the founder of Roy Nelson Healing and the author of Love Notes from Hell and an Amazon bestseller. Let's welcome to the circle, Mr. Nelson. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the circle, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today.
This is exciting, but before we get into the Nelson Method and the 28 Days of Freedom, I have to know, as an addiction survivor, how did you do it? How did you get out of it?
Well, you know, I've been blessed by having a whole lot of pain and grief and suffering in my life.
That was a blessing.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Wow. I always say I almost died at birth, and I kind of went downhill from there. Okay. So, yeah, I grew up in a tough place and tough people and violent, alcoholic, poverty-stricken home and tough place, and it wasn't very tough.
Sounds like
it. It wasn't very tough. I was, you know, it was just, I was way in over my head from the very beginning. And so I was looking for some relief forever. I was always looking for some way of escaping the pain that I was in. And I didn't have anybody I could really talk to. You know, I mean, there's people around, but no one would really understand where I was coming from or how I was feeling, you know. So anyway, so I started early in medicating in various different ways. You know, it starts with fantasy, and you know, as soon as you find your penis, then you use masturbation, and then you've been food, and you know, cigarettes, and you know, one thing or another. I didn't think I'd ever drink until I drank, and I realized what a drink could do for a fellow like me.
How old were you when you had your first drink?
Well, you know, I wasn't very young. I mean, I was in the Army. I was in 17, 18 years old.
Thank you for your service, Tom.
And oh, thank you. And yeah, so, but I didn't, you know, until I didn't think I'd drink because I'd experienced so much pain as a result of my father's drinking and all that. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I'd ever drink until mm-hmm. But once I drank, I realized what it could do for you.
Yeah.
So anyway, I worked from the time I was a little kid, always earned my own money. And I left home when I was 14, and I was in the Army with 17 and married when I was 20, and,
wow.
You know, father of four by the time I was 23, so, wow. So I was in way over my head long.
I'm over 40 and I have a kid, I'm way over my head, wow.
So I was, it was on, you know what I mean? So, I got out of the Army when I was 26. 24 years old after 7 years, 8 months, and 20 days, but who's counting? And, it's hard trying to make a living. I'd come from, didn't have anything to start with. So, you know, and then I finally found, you know, work that I could do that I could do well in. And then by the time I was 28 years old, I was making rounds of psychiatrists for panic attacks and phobias and various and sundry things. Like I said, I was in over my head, and I was trying to, you know, I was operating on, not emotionally equipped for the life I'd created. That's what it really boiled down to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started making the rounds of the doctors, and I had some very good doctors and psychiatrists, psychologists, medical hypnoanalysts. I mean, all kinds
of
good people. And, became, you know, very close with some of these people, but I couldn't get where I needed to go. I learned a lot of good things intellectually, a lot of good things that I still use in the work that I do now, but I couldn't create that shift in consciousness that I needed to get me to where I needed to go. And so I finally, by the time I was 32 years old, I'd been in therapy for off and on for 4.5 years. At the end, I was going to two doctors. One's a psychologist, and another was a medical hypnoanalyst that trained with Dr. William Bryan in Los Angeles. But in any case, I can tell you a whole story about that. Ultimately, I thought how comforting it would be. Of course, I had so much religious insanity as a child that I turned away from anything pertaining to God or religion or anything like that. But I often thought how comforting it would be if only I could believe in God. But I thought I was you know, it's like a kid learns there's no Santa Claus. You can't go back to believing there's Santa Claus, right? So once I knew there was no God, then I mean, then I was hopeless. I mean, I was totally on my own. But interestingly enough, at that time, 1976, some people were running a religious campaign of some sort, and they had this bumper sticker that said, "I found it." You know, I know what they found, but whatever it was, I needed it. You know? So anyway, finally one day out of despair, I called these people, and they were nice, and they sent me something in the mail, which I didn't think much of. They were some religious organization. I'm not sure who they were, frankly. But they sent me something in the mail, and I didn't think much of it until one night, you know, that night, right? That night, that turning at night, mm-hmm. right? Late at night, everything I'd used to make me feel better made me feel worse, and I used a lot of different things. And I mean, you know, sex and food and alcohol, and my work was a big feel-good producer for me. I had my own business, and I had people working for me, and one thing and another. So I got a lot of strokes from my business prowess, you could say. But mm-hmm. ultimately, all of it combined. Initially, the way it works with this process, with addictions or whatever, when we're using something outside of ourselves to feed us, initially, this is enough. And then next thing, well, just these two are enough, or just these mm-hmm. three, these four. Next thing you know, we're using all of them, and then ultimately, all of it's not enough. Mm-hmm. See, that's the progressive nature of the condition.
Ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
You made an interesting point there, and I think a lot of people need to hear this, and Dr. G could even agree.
True.
You were actually successful financially
going
through all this,
which
says a lot about you, the amount of resilience you have, and internal fortitude to continue on with all those addictions. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to be poor or
not
downtrodden to be addicted to all these terrible things.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. In fact,
that's fascinating.
We often call it rock top. You know,
rock
you've heard
top.
You've heard of rock bottom. You know, well, for me,
never heard of rock top.
For me,
it's always the first.
The thing is, I would have. You know, the thing is, the way it worked in my experience and living by that self propulsion, self will, ramming and jamming. See, the real heartbreak comes when you get what you thought you wanted. When you get what you thought would bring you happiness. See, I was convinced when I grew up. As a poor child, I knew if I had enough money and enough sex, right, I'm going to be happy. Right? Well, you know, there's no such thing. Well, the point is, obviously, because at one time with money, you know how that is. At one time, man, if I just had such and such a number, man, I'd feel secure. But when you get that number, you realize that's not nearly as much as you thought it was going to be, right?
Exactly.
It doesn't give you, you know, so there's more.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, with the sex addiction, as you well know, what would turn you on last month is boring this month.
Yeah.
See what I mean? And so you go deeper and deeper and deeper, and then you feel worse and worse. You go further outside your code, right?
That's right.
And then you feel worse and worse and worse about yourself. And so it's a nightmare. I mean, it's an absolute nightmare.
Yes.
So ultimately, I created enough pain and grief and suffering for myself. It made me interested in seeking a spiritual solution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had all kinds of prejudices about religion and God and all this kind of stuff. But I will tell you, the night I hit bottom, now I was morbidly obese. I mean, let me just lay it out for you. I was 32 years old. I was 275 pounds. Completely dependent on alcohol. Had a bag of pills. At one time, I used to hire a doctor or a registered nurse to travel with me to give me IVs of Valium or sodium pentothal if the terror got too bad.
Wow.
You know, I was a father, a husband, a homeowner, a businessman, a veteran, and I had the emotional development of an infant. That's where I was. So these people said to me, even if you don't believe in God, if you ask him for help, he'll help you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't have a lot to do. You can see I'm a gambler. I've, you know, got long fingers, but, you know. But I didn't have a lot to lose. I was dying. I was at the end of my rope, the end of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I rolled out of my bed onto my knees and I cried out to this God. And I will tell you, that night I wasn't particular about who it was. I wouldn't care if it was Allah or Jesus or or Moses, whoever the hell it was, I was good with it. You know, but ultimately, of course, that we all have to start from where we are. You see, I was so wounded by the crazy religion that I grew up with, and in Texas, and the hellfire and brimstone, and God's going to get you, and blah, 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 all that stuff. And it didn't matter what denomination, they're pretty much the same, you know. But, see, that's where we have to start. And then, see, the real process is unlearning. See, you don't have to go looking for the truth. If you face down the myth, you face down the untruth, you face down the faulty data, faulty beliefs, faulty philosophy, faulty way of living, the truth will be in your face. You don't have to go looking for it, in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, I've done plenty of looking for it, but the real truth be known. Deep within every one of us is our spiritual center, our higher self, if you will. Mm-hmm. Well, you call it God, you can call it anything you like. It's all over the place, but as pertaining to us, it's deep within. It's a spark of divinity deep within us, as we all know. And what we're talking about doing is excavating everything that isn't love. See, that we have that love center. Every one of us has that. The essence of us is love.
Mm-hmm.
The essence of us is love. It's God. God is love. God. It's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
But the essence of every one of us is pure. And what we're about doing, what this Nelson method is about, is excavating everything that isn't love. We're talking about dealing with the pain, dealing with the fear, dealing with the guilt that blocks us from having that spark fanned into a flame, so we're filled with love rather than fear.
That's beautiful. I like that.
Wonderful.
That's my only hope. Otherwise, I'm a goner.
I have to ask this. You said it was about 32 or 33?
32, yeah.
32.
32 when you saw God, or whatever it was you at that time experienced.
Uh-huh.
What happened during 37, 38 when your kids were teenagers? Was that a tough time?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, if you can imagine.
We're putting the Nelson method to the test now.
If you can imagine. See, I had ruled with an iron fist, okay? I mean, I was a drill sergeant, blah, blah, you know what I mean? You know? And all of a sudden, I became a wimp. I mean, because all of a sudden, I was just looking for I was just looking to survive, right?
Yeah.
Well, I had three boys growing up, and they knew right where my buttons were, and they knew right where to push them, you know? Oh, my God. You don't even know about those years. But, you know, we somehow survived, and we're all pretty good buddies now, but oh, my God. That was not easy.
And that must have been a really emotional night for you when you did find the transcendent being. Because I'm assuming you must have thought about your kids at that moment as well.
Yeah.
You wanted to provide a better future for them.
Absolutely.
You wanted them to have that father.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I had a peace that came over me that night like I'd never experienced before in my life. And that was only a beginning, because I still had to grow up. Like I said, I still, even though I had the experience, which I needed to have that experience in order for me to realize that there was something somehow, I didn't understand it, and you don't have to understand it, you know.
Right.
You have to experience it. But I experienced something that I knew that I was in awe. I was in absolute awe that I could have that peace that came over me. And what happened is the panic attacks went away, and the anxiety went away, you know, the depression went away. And I mean, I went through back some of that later, because I started losing weight, and you know, all of a sudden I wasn't driven by the obsession to eat. So then I was, you know, oftentimes malnourished. Because I didn't, you know, because I wanted to lose the weight, and at the same time, you know, if I wasn't, and so consequently, you know, there's a lot of issues that come with not being properly nourished, you know, and depression and various things like that. But so it's a process. It's just a process. You know, the whole thing is, but what happens with, you know, with the work that I do, And see, I had to feel my way down the dark corridors trying to find my way, right? You know, I could, and I found, you know, looked, I went a lot of places and talked to a lot of people and got some help, a little bit of help from a lot of people and quite a bit of help from a few people. But I could never get everything I needed from any one place or person or one philosophy or one teaching. And so what I had to do is I had to gather pieces from various teachers and various people and bring it and implement it in my life and discard that which didn't work for me. And then I started to realizing I needed to be helpful to other people. Well, initially, I didn't have anything. I didn't feel like I had anything of a spiritual nature to offer. I'd pick up a hitchhiker and take him where he needed to go, give him $5 or whatever, you know what I mean, or help some lady with her bags or something. But I somehow knew that I needed to be helpful in some way. I needed to be of service. And then finally, after about a number of years into this process, I started being asked to speak at various places and one thing and another. And then I started realizing that I could actually have an impact on other people's, you know, soul and well-being and stuff. And so that's kind of how I got. And then once that happened, then I started realizing. I mean, I've seen miracles happen in other people's lives, but the one that amazes me the most is the one that happens within me when I'm able to touch somebody's heart in a positive way. So that's how I got drawn into doing this. I mean, somebody back in the day, there was a gentleman by the name of Swartz, Jack Swartz. He had been through hell. He had been through concentration camps and torture and everything you can imagine. Well, this fellow read people's auras. And I didn't, you know, I felt about the same way you did probably. But this lady I knew was going to see him, and she invited me to come. And I went and had a session with him. And he told me that I should be helping, that I should be a spiritual leader, a spiritual teacher, a spiritual healer, whatever he did, you know, didn't specify. And I kind of laughed at him, really. I mean, I was in business, and that's furthest thing from my mind, you know. But it's amazing how things... Not by his suggestion, because we'd forgotten all about it, but he taped the interview. And years later, Tricia found the tape, and she played it, and we were amazed at how close we were to doing what he had mentioned. So, but I don't know. I mean, I'm just, you know, our experience is that you know, we can now, because of our experience, because of this, what I've been through in my life, and the grace, and the sweet, loving grace, and the healing that I've experienced, what we know is virtually anybody can overcome virtually anything. Now, I don't mean to, I'm not a doctor and I don't cure cancer and things like that, but what I believe, and I'm convinced that cancer is a symptom. And heart failure, and I mean, certainly there's genetic issues, but much of the sickness that we experience in our lives are grounded in psyche and emotional and spiritual issues. So, what I'm about is helping people deal with their pain, deal with their fears, and deal with their guilt.
Dr. G, I think.
Yeah, I would like to, you know, bring this is a great discussion. First of all, you know, just in terms of your person and character, I would like to add humor is the hallmark. Humor is the hallmark. And you may be surprised that maybe that has been all along what has pulled you through all those, you know, hardship. Besides, certainly spiritual connection is what people need, but on a daily basis and moment-to-moment basis. I really admire that about you. And when it comes to effectiveness, you know, of a method, but a few things that come to my mind also, you know, there was research done by Norcross for many treatment modalities. And basically what they found throughout a lot of meta-analysis in the field of psychology and psychotherapy, that the best predictor for healing and success of therapeutic approach was the connection, the therapeutic relationship between the therapist and the client. And that is something that Tricia had alluded to earlier, which you're also completing with your discussion, which I believe is a paramount component of your method, because you're unlike a lot of other therapists, I would say, you know, this investment that you have in the person, in the relationship, whether it is, and you have said, whether it is a couple of hours or a whole day you spend with a client, that is huge. That means a lot, because it goes beyond just applying this rational side of, you know, understanding a principle, and it really delves into that human connection, the bond. So almost like reestablishing a healthy bond, right? That's important. The other thing that comes to my mind also is the concept of, I don't know if you have heard of it, of the wounded healer. That is huge in the field of psychotherapy, that most of us as therapists are wounded healers, you know, and I would say you're kind of just a hallmark of that, you know, with everything that you discussed, all those wounds that you have had and you have healed, they are now allowing you to really be present-minded with the client, right, without losing it. I mean, that is strong. And one of my mentors once told me, the key to success of a therapist is to be able to remain with one foot in reality, in your own reality, and with the other foot in their reality. You know, that's very, very, and that's not an easy job.
Right.
You know? And it takes probably 30 plus years of wounding and healing to go through all these struggles and still be able to sit with the wounds of a client and connect with them and be there for them, understand them. Just like again, Tricia was explaining earlier that you got her. And that's huge. I mean, a lot of times my clients, I would say 20% of the time, I have clients who are coming in, and after 3 or 4 sessions, they tell me, "Doc, I got it. I know exactly what you're talking about, but I've been there, done that. It doesn't work for me, right?" That's when I know, I've noticed that in the past, that that's why I started to use an integral approach and a systemic approach of therapy modality, where we tap into emotions, behaviors, even spirituality, even the spiritual journey of a person to grow, you know, very holistically. And this is the part that is very important, I believe, as it applies to the Nelson method and the specific value that it has for people who have been there, done that many, many years through married recovery centers, if you will, back and forth and failed. Well, mostly they have been working on some kind of behavioral modification. They have been working on changing irrational beliefs, this and that. But you're right. It is that core element of which I call really existential. You can call it spiritual or existential. It's a cross-section between all of them. But that's what matters most. And you're so focused on it, like almost like with hawk eyes, right? As you know exactly how excavate it. That seems to be the case. But what I would really like to do for our viewers, so they can get a little bit more of a tangible connection with you, so to know what makes the difference, right? You can share with them a few of the things that perhaps you do differently compared to other therapists. I want them to hear from you rather than from me or Carlos or Tricia.
Maybe you can give us like an anecdote of something that a client told you. I went to the therapist, it didn't work out, but you did something. Yeah. They said, "Roy,
that's good.
How did you figure that out?"
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, it's as you well know, describing it trying to put it in words is not as easy as it may seem,
absolutely.
You know, because a friend used to say, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. That's one thing. Now, that's a very important aspect of it. And when you've been to the depths of hell that I've been to, there's nothing more that brings more joy than helping someone overcome that pain. You know, it's just because it's so lonely. It is such a terribly lonely illness because, you know, and that's why I need to be boundaryless in the sense that if they call me at 3 a.m. with a panic attack, they come over, you know, whatever it is. And it's amazing. One lady had a panic attack and she came over to see me about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. She's never had another panic attack.
Never?
Never.
Wow.
You know, and what did I do? I answered the phone. shorter. You know what I mean? I had to come on over. Yeah. But she somehow realized that she's not alone.
Yes.
And
that somebody cares, you know. Yeah. Not that the doctors didn't care. Yeah. It's just it was a different model, right? I mean, you know, it was just a different model. I had doctors flying with me and traveling with me, and I mean, you know, drinking with me. I mean, what I mean is, so this wasn't like they didn't care. I mean, they did. But so it's not we're in competition with nobody, right? I mean, we're not you know, if a person can get the help they need by conventional means, they should. It's simpler, it's easier, less expensive. I mean, not, you know, just whatever, you know. So, you know, the caring is so important to know. Yeah. Not that anybody, other people don't care. Mm-hmm. It's just that there's something about them knowing that you care.
True.
And that you'll do whatever it takes, you know.
Wonderful.
And that's one aspect of it. But, you know, it's just, it's a little hard to describe, frankly, you know.
No, I like that. I think really that sums it up. You know why? Mm-hmm. In my opinion, because, do you know what Robin Williams's words were about his issue and problem when he killed himself, and then everybody was printing or provocating that phrase that he had said about himself?
No, what did he say?
Well, that was his issue. That was basically the same thing. He said that, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember exact quote, but he said something very similar to what you said, mm-hmm. in terms of you can't imagine how lonely you can be, even with the very closest people
Absolutely.
Around you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was kind of the core issue, the gist of his pain.
Yeah.
That was the big thing. You're surrounded by many people,
but
you're still feeling lonely.
Yeah.
And that is, I love what you said, that is the key component about
your
understanding of this problem, that you can be present-minded with your clients and be able to help them.
It's a neat aspect, because you can't get that. When you see a therapist, you leave. You go back into the world that caused a lot of this trouble, according to you, of course. Yeah. You're out there perceiving it.
Right.
But Roy's always there.
Yeah.
You know, through his program, he's there. You're able to go back to him. You're able to talk to him.
Yeah.
So you're not alone.
Yeah.
Because I know, you see the therapist, you walk out, he's not with you.
Yeah. Right.
He's not walking back to your neighborhood, back to your problems.
But you know, it's so interesting, too, along those lines. You see, they don't need nearly as much of my time.
Yeah, sure.
Because they know they can have whatever they need.
Whatever they need.
You know what I mean?
So just knowing about it.
Yeah, what I mean is, you know, and that's why we don't have to have a lockup. You know, the problem with any lockup, you get to come out. You know what I mean? That's the problem with any, unless you're going to stay there the rest of your life, you got to come out. And in reality, that's where people get in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, but people come to see me for, a couple of hours or so, and they go on about their business, and, you know, I give them some assignments, some one thing and another like that, and they maybe get back together that evening or whatever, but, you know, it's a very easy, flexible schedule that people, and they don't have to leave their homes, they don't leave their jobs or their families or whatever, you know, so it's not like going away to treatment, even though it's, in fact, very effective and more effective in many cases. We have many people come to us who have been in many treatment centers.
Yeah,
it couldn't get where they needed to go.
I know want to touch on this question real quickly. Is the five pillars of transformation? What is that all about?
Well, you know, to begin with, you know, we have to realize. I'm not going to paraphrase. I won't, you know, name them exactly, but essentially, what we're talking about here. You see, if we go, let's just say for a person that had an eating disorder. Well, a person goes has an eating disorder, they don't treatment centers or whatever else, the entire focus is on the eating disorder. And what we know, when people don't realize, the eating disorder is a snowflake on the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the eating disorder is not the problem. The addiction, every addiction, and you can go to eating disorder, to alcohol, you know, drugs, whatever it is. See, I don't treat those things because those things aren't the problem. Yeah. Those things are what we use to try to cope with the problem.
Exactly.
See what I mean? That's what we're using, food or alcohol or cigarettes or, you know, big cars, fast women, whatever it is. I mean, it's you know, and there's a lot of very socially acceptable addictions.
Yeah.
Work
yeah,
and
yeah.
working out and, you know, a lot of things that we use to try to hold it together.
Mm-hmm.
but what we're really talking about, you see, as long as I had the pain, I was going to crave a painkiller. Food's a painkiller, alcohol's a painkiller, pills, you know, drugs, you know, sex, I mean, work, I mean, there's lots of things that we use as a painkiller. As long as I had the fear, I was going to be looking for escape, right? And there's many ways of escaping, eating, you know, obsessing with your bulimia or whatever it is. And as long as I had the guilt, I was going to require punishment. And every addiction, every one of these psychoses, if you will, has those three components. It's a painkiller, it's a form of escape, and it's a form of punishment. And you see the nature of the condition, and I won't get into the clinical terms, but the psychosis, frankly, the psychotic literally believes that his line of reasoning is sound. He literally believes.
Yeah, that's what they're following.
He literally believes his line of reasoning is sound. Mm-hmm. Well, you see, this condition we're suffering from centers in the psyche, in the subconscious mind. And in that sense, it is psychotic. And to believe that you're going to feel better in something that's going to kill you. In other words, you're going to get help from something that's going to kill you. That's insane. Mm-hmm. Right?
That is insane.
You know, and that's what happens every day. Mr. Williams, a little angel. I mean, what an angel. And look what he gave us.
Amazing.
And what he gave us. And frankly, I met Mr. Williams about 9 years ago, and I asked him to help me get the word out about the work I do. Mm-hmm. And he didn't realize at that time, obviously, the gravity of his condition. Mm-hmm. But see, I could have helped him because I could let him know that he's not alone. Mm-hmm. But again, that's the problem. Because, and we only hear about the famous ones. You know, you hear about Mr. Hoffman. You hear about, you know, lots of them. Janis Joplin, Elvis Presley, Cass Elliot. And there's, you know, many. Jimi Hendrix. Lots of them. You hear about the famous ones. But you don't hear about the hundreds and thousands of them who are obscure like you know, some, I mean, who die out there with nobody knowing, you know. Yeah. And rarely do they put it on the death certificate that he ate himself to death. Uh-huh. They'll call it cancer, they'll call it heart failure, they'll call it a stroke, or they'll call it diabetes, right?
It's a good point. Think about it that way.
Yeah, but it's suicide on the installment plan, really. You know, I mean, that's what it is. And again, and I'm not criticizing anybody for being, you know, overweight or whatever it is. I mean, I needed everything I needed to hold myself together, to make it possible for me to be the responsible adult such as I was. I mean, I was far from being the father I wish I'd been, or the husband I wish I'd been, or the brother or the son, or, you know, I was far from being the person I'd like to be. But, it's just we all do the best we can. And we have a process for overcoming the guilt and the shame and the remorse, you know, for all the mistakes that we've made, you know, because we've made plenty of mistakes.
And, you know, that's exactly why we are creating these shows, in terms of highlighting these aspects of human condition. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, there is no shame, really, in having to experience some of these along the path of really our self-actualization. Mm-hmm. Everybody comes to this world with that dilemma of having to grow up.
Yeah.
Right? So everybody has to experience these ups and downs. So, and for you being so aware of these aspects and having experienced it yourself from different perspectives, and then being able to really connect with your clients and help them, and really getting the reward that you mentioned, the greatest reward, you know, the wounded healer, you know, healing even more through
absolutely.
That process, right?
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing all this insight into your method with us.
My pleasure. I'm so happy to
be
with
you.
I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
It's a fabulous show. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. G.
You're welcome.
If you're feeling alone, if you're feeling like nothing is working, even the therapy or the medication, some other kind of addiction or some other vent that you have, Roy Nelson Healing is a great suggestion. It's a great idea. I highly recommend it. Roy Nelson Healing, he wrote the book, Love Notes from Hell, Amazon bestseller. Get that. Call them. RoyNelsonHealing.com. Remember, our motto is simple. Wherever there's psychology involved, we are there. We'll see you next time, everyone.